Bing bong. I'm back with another edition of the State of Bitcoin podcast, where I'm bringing back an old episode with Larry Lepard. I had the pleasure of speaking with him a few months ago. I'm going to bring him back on because I feel like this episode was highly, highly, highly underrated, but I'm leaving it up as a prep. So be sure to be tuned in to this great episode with Larry Lepard, and know that obviously this is not financial advice. Everything you hear in this podcast is strictly the opinion of Larry and myself. And smash that subscribe button, man. Hit it. Hit that subscribe button. Share the podcast. Spread the word of the State of Bitcoin podcast with your friends and family. And shout out to the Bitcoin Advisor. If you're looking to safely secure your Bitcoin, put it in a trust. Make sure that your loved ones can access your Bitcoin one in the event of you passing. Contact me at content.thebitcoinadvisor.com/greencandle and set an appointment, and we could see if our services are right for you. And shout out to Hodler's Official. That's HODLERS official.com. They got the number one Bitcoin jerseys in the game. You can use the promo code greencandle for 10% off of your entire order to get either a basketball or a baseball themed jersey. All right, enough from me. Let's get into Larry.
If every millionaire wanted to have just one Bitcoin, they couldn't do it. When confidence is fully lost in the government and the Federal Reserve System, you know, everyone will say, you know, what do you mean you don't own gold and Bitcoin? What are you, nuts? You know, you like being robbed, you know, and inflation will be just raging.
Right. You named unemployment, right? It hasn't gone up as quite as drastically as they think it should have by now, and that they're still going to kind of continue.
Well, and keep in mind, they use a birth-death model. They've got, you know, none of these numbers are trustworthy, Brennan. I mean, they're all And frankly, that's one of the things that really disturbs me. I've heard from time to time, not many, but I've heard a few Bitcoiners. I'm on the stage with one over in England who said, well, the cap's a problem. You know, we got to maybe grow the cap at some slow rate to account for, you know, more usage in a bigger world. And I was like, what the f*** are you talking about? I mean, if any core developer proposed that, I hope they'd be laughed out of the room. You know, the cap is the cap, period. So
let's take a step back and dive into the Bitcoin origin story, because I know you're a gold bug. So I feel like the relationship between gold bugs and Bitcoiners are kind of similar in a sense, but there's also, you know, some gold bugs that are very anti-Bitcoin. So, you know, How did you, I guess, get orange pilled and
so
kind of your way there?
My sound money journey started a long time ago, long before Bitcoin was even, you know, around, right? I mean, pre-2008, gold was your only or your best sound money choice. Now Bitcoin's a better choice, but And so I was kind of aware of it probably in 2010-ish, maybe. I heard about it through the Ron Paul circles, the Free State stuff. And, you know, and I thought this is an interesting project, but I was skeptical that technically you could make sound money on a computer. You know, it'd been tried a bunch of times before, Gold Money and, you know, Adam Savo and some other guys had tried it, and it hadn't really worked. But I kept an eye on it, and I thought about buying some through, you know, with Paperwall. That seemed kind of cumbersome, and I was lucky. Mt. Gox came out, and I said, all right, a brokerage firm, I can buy some. That's good. I had forms filled out. I was just about to wire them the money, and then they failed. So I kind of dodged that bullet, you know, through just luck, sheer luck. And then when Coinbase came public and, you know, big, reputable, venture-backed California company that could buy Bitcoin, bang, you know, I bought some, I think it was 300 and something of a coin in those days. So And I started kind of exploring and trying to understand more of it. But my concern, I had been a technology investor for a long, long time and sound money gold guy for a long, long time. And my concern was always, is this technology sound enough to really be immutable and you know, reputable? I just, again, having seen the failed experiments, I thought, well, this one could fail too. And so I started going to conferences and meeting core developers. The MIT had a lot of early conferences in the early days. And I learned a lot there, you know, the having, the difficulty, all the things that we all know now that make it what it is, you know, SHA-256 and the cryptography, you know, the blockchain, et cetera. So, and it became clear to me over time that, you know, yeah, actually it is what it says and what they said it was, which is really sound money that can't be changed and with a mathematical formula and so on and so forth. And so, you know, my conviction just kind of grew and grew and grew. Now, I was always quite convicted, still am, that gold is a great form of sound money, not as good as Bitcoin, but good. You know, the government can't print it, and that's a huge advantage, right? And gold has protected you from, you know, from government printing to a degree. A lot of what, you know, I consider should have been the excess has been taken away because they've manipulated the shit out of it, as we all know. But it has worked. I mean, it's gone up 8% a year compound since 71. That's better than zero. You know, and you know, it bought a men's suit in Roman times, still buys a men's suit 1 ounce. So you know, you've kind of, you know, you've got gold ticking along as big old analog sound money. And then along comes this new form of sound money, digital sound money, which has a gazillion other advantages. And it's not very well known or adopted. And so you've got two things pushing the Bitcoin price higher. You know, the fact that the fiat currencies are all getting debased enormously over time and eventually will be completely debased, i.e. worthless, which is hyper-Bitcoinization. And then you've got the fact that, you know, you've got this new form of sound money, which is not widely known, not widely distributed, still in the early infancy days. And more people are going to come and realize that it's really, you know, it's gold that doesn't cost money to store. It's gold that can be transferred in 10 minutes. You know, it's gold that's deflationary, not inflationary. I mean, even in the case of gold, the supply of gold will double in the next 40 years. It grows at about 1.8% a year. So you compound that, you know, we're going to have more gold. And of course, as we all know, the supply of Bitcoin is fixed. And so that makes it a deflationary currency, which some people say is bad. I think it's obviously good. You know, following along Jeff Booth's thesis of how the world is relentlessly deflationary. And so, you know, that's kind of how I migrated. I just kept an open mind to it. And I was always techno savvy because I'd been a venture capital investor. I'd seen the internet and I watched the network effect take place in the internet. And I think there's a big network effect taking place in Bitcoin. I mean, of course, in the early days, one of the great things, well, is this, you know, is this, what was the predecessor to Facebook? There was another predecessor.
MySpace?
Yeah, exactly. Is this MySpace to Facebook? And you know, that was always a concern, a lot of people in the early days. But then you came to realize, well, no, because not everyone's going to MySpace. And it's like Google today. I mean, you know, nobody's going to supplant Google as the leading search engine because everyone goes there. And so networks, as they grow, they grow geometrically and they become more valuable exponentially. And that's really what's going on with Bitcoin. I think the odds of somebody coming and supplanting Bitcoin, a better Bitcoin coming along, have kind of dropped to zero. And there might have been a time earlier on when, you know, there were a lot more competitors. And, you know, as we all know, we had fork wars and we had block size wars. And there have been a lot of issues as the thing has grown up. You know, and even as recently as not that many years ago, there were some security problems and, you know, some breaches, and the core developers have kind of, you know, the community has done a good job of holding it all together. And so I've grown very comfortable that the technical risk is quite low, and I see continued adoption by any metrics that, you know, you want to look at, you know, wallets, addresses, number of coins per address, etc. And so to me, it's a matter of time until everybody realizes that this is your superior savings form of money. You know, I think the highest and best use case, in my view, is store of value. The remittances are great. You know, Lightning's great. I think it's going to take over a lot of different areas. But the most obvious to me is store of value. You know, and so there's, you know, 400, depends on what you want to measure, but there's $400, $500, $600 trillion of assets out there. And Bitcoin's not even a half a trillion. You know, or maybe it's just over a half a trillion dollars of value. And as more and more people come to understand it, more and more people are going to park their money in Bitcoin. And, you know, as I know, you know, and I know that the prices are just going to be much, much higher. I mean, what are there, 21 million coins or 40? I heard the other day that 40 million millionaires in the world. So if every millionaire wanted to have just one Bitcoin, they couldn't do it. I mean, so what does that tell you, right, about where the price of Bitcoin is going? It's going higher.
Yeah, it definitely is. I mean, I feel like, you know, as you and Greg always say, it's just math, right? But, right. You know, it is interesting your journey, right? But because you said you were kind of like, you know, in the tech venture capital space. So, you know, did you avoid, I guess, going down the shitcoin rabbit hole and that kind of avenue as
That's
well?
That's a great question. No, I can't say I totally avoided it because I, like so many others, I thought, well, maybe one of these others is going to work. So I confess I own some Ethereum and I own some Litecoin, and I was smart enough or lucky enough when I could. Remember when they forked Bitcoin a couple of times? It was Bitcoin Gold, but, you know, Bitcoin Cash. I got those, and if they were tradable, I sold them and just bought the major coin because I was pretty sure the forks wouldn't work. But no, I never promoted the shit coins, and I never went crazy on them. But I used to be of the view that there was a place for shit coins, and some of them would get used. And, you know, before Lightning came along, I thought, well, maybe, you know, it was clear to me that Bitcoin was a superior store of value because of its size and the, you know, just the difference. I mean, the way it was constructed, it was going to be the store of value case. But I thought, well, you know what? Somebody's going to make another coin that's really good for transactions that's cheap. You know, that for under a penny per transaction, you can transact digitally. And of course, I couldn't see the Lightning Network. It didn't exist. And so, you know, I was wondering, well, is that going to be Litecoin? Is that going to be Cardano? Is it, you know, what is it going to be? There might be some other solution. So I owned a few of those for a while. But as time went by, particularly when Lightning emerged, it was like, and as I got to see the monetary policies of those other coins like Ethereum, what does he change that policy like 6 or 7 times? You know, and I mean, it's just like, okay, you know, you really don't have a cap on the number of these things. So why do these things have any value? I mean, the whole value prop of Bitcoin, as we all know, is the cap on issuance. And frankly, that's one of the things that really disturbs me. I've heard from time to time, not many, but I've heard a few Bitcoiners. I was on the stage with one over in England who said, well, the cap's a problem. You know, we got to maybe grow the cap at some slow rate to account for, you know, more usage in a bigger world. And I was like, what the fuck are you talking about? I mean, first of all, there's no way the nodes and miners and everyone else going to agree to do that. But second, I mean, if any core developer proposed that, I hope they'd be laughed out of the room. You know, the cap is the cap, period. So, I had a little bit of a shitcoin experience thinking that maybe some of them would work. And now I'm pretty sure they're all going to die. I could be wrong about that. One or two of them might make it. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like that's kind of the way that things are trending, right? I mean, it definitely seems like Bitcoin is king. And, you know, I think to a certain extent, everybody kind of had that, like, crypto curious aspect of things is what I guess I'll call it, you know? Yeah. I mean, I want to dive into the dichotomy between gold and Bitcoin because, sure, you know, obviously, they're Bitcoin has all the, you know, sound money principles similar to gold. But, you know, obviously, in the kind of the growing digital age, it seems to make a lot of sense. But, you know, it seems like there's a difference between the gold bugs and the Bitcoiners where they kind of, you know, agree on a lot of things. But for some reason, a lot of the gold bugs aren't coming around to Bitcoin just yet. You know, why do you kind of think that is?
That's a great question. I mean, let me just give you some data that I think you find helpful. I go to gold conferences. I speak at gold conferences. I always ask, how many of you guys own Bitcoin? About half the hands go up. So, you know, there's a lot of overlap. I mean, I think gold people are generally speaking Austrian economists. We all know that fiat's doomed. So in that, gold people and Bitcoiners are completely aligned. You know, they hate fiat. They know the government's debasing their wealth and that it pisses them off. Okay. Some of the gold people, I think, have been locked in kind of the old mindset that if you can't touch it or feel it, it's not real. You know, they're not digitally astute. They don't understand what immutable digital stuff is. And frankly, I get it. I mean, everyone was skeptical of it when they first heard it. Some of the gold people, they look at guys like, you know, Sam Bankman-Fried or even guys who I think are pretty legit, but very promotional like Pomp. And they say, oh, gosh, it's just a lot of arm waving and promotional crap. You know, how can it be sound money when it's got these clowns in it? And obviously the shitcoiners, in my opinion, did a lot of damage to the underlying thesis of Bitcoin. I mean, Bitcoin's a legitimate technological innovation. The shitcoiners are not, you know, they are unregistered securities where they can, you know, usually the people at the top control the issuance and they've issued themselves coin and they're running pump and dumps. So, you know, and gold people are good at sniffing out fraud. And so they see that and they go, oh, I get it. These guys are fraud. Yeah. Therefore everything in this area is fraud. And they haven't taken the time to understand technologically what Bitcoin is and why it's different than shit coins and why the Sam Bankman-Frieds are not anything like any real Bitcoiner would ever be. You know, I mean, and what's ironic is many of us who saw Bankman-Fried on the stage at, you know, these shows and so forth, we knew this guy was a bad guy. It was not hard to figure it out, you know, and but, you know, the SEC let him run wild and, you know, it ended as we all kind of knew it would, in tears and so on and so forth. So, gold guys, I don't know about Peter Schiff. I mean, maybe he owns some Bitcoin secretly. I don't know. His son does, which I find interesting. But, you know, I don't know. I think, you know, some of it's a generational thing. They don't want to spend the time to understand it. You know, gold has served them well and so on and so forth. But I found over time, I mean, I've had many people, I ran a fund that was only gold and gold and silver miners pre-Bitcoin, and because I started the fund, actually started in 2006, and I've had a lot of those people be very suspicious of Bitcoin, and I've converted them, you know, by explaining why it makes sense. And then just so you know, that fund right now is about 85% gold and silver miners, because that's what people invested in me for. But it's about 15% Bitcoin and some Bitcoin companies. And you know, I've had a couple of people leave me, say, I was only with you for gold and silver. You didn't do this other shitty stuff. I'm out. I was like, okay, fine. The way I justify it, I say, look, you guys, I'm supposed to be protecting you from inflation, and you know, I'm a sound money fund. And you know, if I didn't have the soundest money on the planet as at least a piece of my fund, I wouldn't be doing the right job for you. And the reason it's only 15% is the volatility. You know, I've got investors who tend to be on the older side, a lot of boomers. And, you know, for older people, and for young people, the volatility is like a plus. Like, okay, I'll buy it when it's cheap, I'll sell it when it's, you know, dear, blah, blah, blah. For older people, it's a scary thing, because you take a lot of your wealth and you're 70 years old and you put in, you have a 70% drawdown. Well, that scares the living shit out of you, because you don't have the time to recover that a young person has. So that's why I've weighted it the way I've weighted it in the fund. And I think, you know, I understand gold people. I try to be kind to them. And, you know, as long as they're open-minded, you know, I understand why they're skeptical of it. I get it. You know, and also look at it from their point of view. They've been, a lot of them have been fighting this fight for 30 years. Then along comes this better, more shiny object. And it's kind of kicking their ass. And they're like, Jesus Christ. You know, and it feels very unfair to them. I get that too. But my view is you got to adapt to the times, right? I mean, you get new information and you adapt. And we're still very much in the early days of Bitcoin. You know, it's like I try to emphasize to them, they're not too late, particularly with it here at 30. I mean, it was at 68. Obviously, you know, it was less of a deal, but it's a great deal right now. It was a great deal, you know, 6-9 months ago at 15, right? A really great deal. So, you know, and I say you got to buy the dips and you got a dollar cost average. And I've got a lot of my clients doing that now. So that gives you some background on that.
Yeah, that's great stuff. And it, I mean, it seems like it's kind of, I guess, maybe it resonates more with people a little bit now. You know, it seems like you kind of had people that already had the hard money principles, right? Of
right.
Gold and silver and other things like that. But I mean, do you think like the massive amounts of money printing that we saw in 2020 and kind of like the crazy inflationary times, you think that's kind of, I guess, leaving people more open to the opportunity of Bitcoin and kind of, I guess.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think, you know, I mean, you know, with each down cycle and recovery, more and more people get converted. Do you know what I mean? I mean, 1,000 down to 300 and then 17,000 down to 3,500. And, you know, I mean, each time, it, you know, it's we're seeing higher highs and higher lows. And yeah, I mean, the other thing I think really woke a lot of people up was just the explosive nature of Bitcoin. I mean, as you'll recall, in 18, 19, I mean, those couple of years, it traded between 5 and 10K for a long time. And then bam, it was at, you know, 50. And I mean, this is a sharper spear. I mean, it's what, you know, Paul Tudor Jones says, this is the fastest horse in the monetary debasement race. Or I like Luke Roman, who he says, you know, this is the only functioning fire alarm because the price of gold has been suppressed. And when Bitcoin went from 10 to 50, I mean, I think a lot of people woke up and were like, holy shit, you know, this thing's real. You know, and they're going to be, my view is they're going to be equally surprised when it goes from 15 or 30 to 150, you know, and then again, they're going to be surprised when it goes from 200, 150 to a million. And we're going to just continue to see these cycles. And as you know, they're based on the 4-year cycle of the halving. And so, you know, I fully expect that, you know, we'll come out of this year in the 50, 60 area, and we'll next year we'll be up through 100. And, you know, then we'll really ramp off of that the way you do kind of, you know, 18, 12 to 18 months after a halving. And, you know, we'll have $200,000, $300,000 Bitcoin. And honestly, at that point in time, if, you know, you're overweight, probably wouldn't be crazy to sell a little bit and, you know, either use it to buy it when it comes back in or put it, you know, diversify your assets. I mean, I know a lot of people are 100% Bitcoin. I'm not, but, you know, I'm like 50% gold, silver, 50% Bitcoin personally. So, you know, to me, they balance each other out. They're both forms of sound money. One is analog, one is digital. And you know, the digital form is growing much more rapidly. Adoption is growing much more rapidly. Gold's been around 5,000 years. So, you know, it's, and the price, by the way, the price of gold has never gone up 5X in 18 months. It just hasn't happened. You know, a big up year for gold is 30%, but in turn, a big drawdown for gold is 20%. You know, and as you and I both know, we've had some drawdowns in Bitcoin, and we had 90%, 80%, 70%. That's a pretty big drawdown. And, you know, some people are, you know, I mean, the way I handle that, the way I advise others to handle that is you just don't put all your eggs in that basket. You know, I mean, if it's got a lot of upward optionality, which it does, then you make sure you weight it accordingly. And if you have, you know, 4% personal weighting into Bitcoin, it draws down 70%, you're not getting wiped out. You know, you use the drawdown to buy more. I mean, that's what I did. I was buying pretty heavily in that in the fall of 2017 when it ramped up to 17,000. Actually, I think I might have hit 19 very briefly, but for a while it was in the 17,000 range, and I was buying, and I bought a lot at 1,000 and 2,000 all the way up, and then it crashed. It went from 17 to 10, and I doubled down. It went from 10 to 3.5. I doubled down again. So I mean, it's kind of like you got to know what you know and know why you own it and be prepared. I mean, I you know, the Bitcoin I own, I have a very long term time frame on. I don't intend to sell any of it. You know, it probably end up going to my kids. So.
Well, it's kind of interesting that you're lining out, you know, we're talking a little bit about price action too, because obviously, you know, as you lined out, Bitcoin's very, you know, young, right? I mean, it's been
Right.
late 2008, 2009 time is when, you know, it kind of, you know, came
Right.
into the scene. And, you know, since that time, we've had basically a decade long of, you know, zero rate in, or 0% interest rates. Obviously, 2019, the hiked a little bit, then pulled back.
Yeah.
And now we're seeing massive amounts of inflation. Well, it is kind of interesting, right? I mean, the macro environment right now is a little hairy.
Oh,
Come
a
around the
little.
time. Yeah, let's dive in. So
A
what's
little.
like
Yeah, it's massively hairy. I mean, shit's breaking all over the place. I mean, you know, look, they've thus far they've been effective at sweeping it under the rug, but you know, Silicon Valley Bank, Signature Bank, Credit Suisse, I mean, you know, they must inflate or die. And in the leveraged credit-based system that we have, what Powell is doing is an elaborate bluff that cannot last forever. You know, or to the degree that he tries to make it last forever, we're going to have something that's going to rival the Great Depression in terms of a downturn, in terms of failures. And you know, look, economies spiral up as credit is created, and they spiral down as credit and values go down. And you know, they obviously got carried away with COVID and grew the money supply 42% in 2 years and sent checks to everybody. And you know, it kept everything going, kept the economy going. But you know, it sure wasn't transitory inflation. They told us it became red hot inflation. And of course, now they're trying to solve that. And that's why the price of Bitcoin is down. The price of gold has been softer than it otherwise would have been. But you know, they can only continue this act for a certain amount of time. And then you watch, they'll pivot the exact same way they did from, you know, inflation is transitory to, oh my shit, oh my God, we got an inflation problem. And so, you know, at some point here, what we're going to see is that we're going to have a, you know, oh my God, we got an economic collapse problem. You know, the bond market's falling apart, the stock market's falling apart, the economy's falling apart, unemployment's rising very rapidly. You know, okay, fine. What do we do? What's the playbook? Well, we know what it always has been since 1971. We take interest rates down and we print money. And that's what will happen next. And when that does, you know, Bitcoin will squirt through a couple hundred thousand and gold will squirt through 3,000 or 4,000. And you know, once again, these assets will protect us from the debasement that's occurring. And you know, in that next round, the Fed balance sheet won't be 9 trillion, it'll be 17 or 18, and federal deficit won't be 32 billion trillion, it'll be 45 or 50. And you know, gasoline won't be $3 or $4, it'll be $7 or $8. And I mean, it's and so on and so on, right? I mean, that's the system we're in, and it's broken. And that's why, you know, more and more people are coming to understand that these assets are really important, you know, in terms of preserving wealth. I mean, real estate works too. I mean, you know, basically, what's the problem? The problem is the government can't, they've got a spending problem. They can't, it's like a drinking problem. They try and solve too much drinking with more drinking. And that drinking really is just printing money. And, you know, that's going to lead to, you know, currency debasement. And ultimately, I think, you know, and this is hard to tell when, but I kind of picked. Pointed is between some 2028 and 2035, I think they're going to lose control of the whole damn thing, and the currency is going to be worthless. But you know, that's an extreme statement, and I could be wrong about it. But that's how, you know, if you kind of look at the history of arcs of inflation leading to ultimately hyperinflation, that's kind of how they take place.
What's up, everybody? We're taking a quick commercial break here to bring you the sponsor, the Bitcoin Advisor. Are you wondering how can I guarantee the security of my Bitcoin? How can I shield my Bitcoin assets from any unexpected loss? What happens to my Bitcoin assets after I'm gone? How can I educate my family about these investments? And lastly, can I invest these investments into my retirement fund, into Bitcoin? Well, I can help you with all of that. You can book an appointment with me, the one and only, you can't clone me, Brandon from Green Candle. If you go to the link below, thebitcoinadvisor.com/greencandle, that's advisor with an E. I get tripped up on that. I'm not a great speller, but I can help you with all of those questions I mentioned earlier. All right. Now book an appointment and I'll see you back at the episode. Yeah, I mean, it seems like we're kind of like almost in that space right now. I mean, you look at the CPI print, right? They're you know, manipulating it and it's getting lower and lower, right? But it doesn't seem like inflation is going anywhere. And obviously that's compounding from the 8% last year to the 4% this year. That's obviously compounded over time. Yeah. And it seems to be getting worse, right? And the inflation's staying sticky. So, I mean, you know, the Fed's almost trying to, like, it seems like their only card in their playbook is to, you know, raise interest rates, right? I mean, but, you know, we've had the economy that was essentially shut down for months at a time with COVID. And then now, you know, the massive amounts of money printing, it seems like it's a recipe for disaster. But, you know, we're kind of, I guess, in this stage right now where we're floating along and everybody's kind of, I guess, just dealing with the times, right? If you look at the data that the Fed has kind of spoke on, right, you named unemployment, right? It hasn't gone up as quite as drastically as they think it should have by now, and that they're still going to kind of continue.
Well, and keep in mind, they use a birth death model. They've got, you know, none of these numbers are trustworthy, Brandon. I mean, they're all bullshit. I mean, you know, the inflation rates are much higher than they say they are. Unemployment's probably much higher. You know, they've redefined unemployment to, you know, once you drop out of the workforce, you're no longer unemployed if you've been out for a certain period of time. I mean, you know, we live in a big house of mirrors that, you know, they're just trying to keep it all together and keep us all happy, and they lie to us about everything. So, you know, it's pretty hard to really gauge what's truly going on in the economy. But I think the economy is a lot worse than most people realize. And I think that, you know, the you can only, you know, what people are doing right now is they're living off their credit cards. You know, the credit card growth rate is just, it's going through the moon. And the related issue that, you know, this all comes down to confidence in the fiat currency, confidence in the Fed, confidence in the dollar, which in turn all comes down to is the government, what's the government fiscal situation look like, or financial situation? And as you know, we got 32, you know, we had 31.4 trillion. It's now grown 800 billion in, you know, less than a few weeks of June. It's going, you know, there is no limit until January of 2025. And you just know this debt's going to get bigger. I mean, you know, the GFC coming out of 2008, we printed $3 trillion and it took us 3 or 4 years to do that. I mean, this time around in 2019 to, you know, 2021, where we had the COVID event, I mean, we printed $6 trillion and it took us under, you know, 6 months or a year to do that. So, you know, the next time around, we're going to print $12 trillion. And, you know, and this is how gasoline gets to $8 or $9. And this is, you know, this is just, I mean, they are robbing us blind by diluting the value of the currency. And so anyone who has any savings absolutely positively has to convert those savings into something that can't be printed, you know, in physical goods, food, guns, you know, real estate, Bitcoin, gold, silver. They all qualify as tangible things that the government can't just print out of thin air.
Yeah. And I mean, you brought up the statistics too, right? I mean, on the unemployment note, I mean, I saw something the other day that said 650,000 Americans over the age of 80 working last year, which is 18% more than a decade earlier. So, I mean, you know, that's probably inflating those employment numbers as well, right? I mean, we have people working later in life, not able to retire.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, think about it. It's really sad. I mean, if you know, you retire, you have a certain set amount of money coming in either through your pension, your Social Security, or your savings. And, you know, you might, you know, you, most people, I think when they do the retirement equation, they think, okay, I'm 80. I could live to 100. The odds are pretty good. I'm not going to make it beyond that. So this money's got to last me 20 years. Well, if suddenly you have a huge spate of inflation, you know, that's a problem, right? You're looking at running out of money. Now, if you have relatives, they'll take care of you, whatever it might be. And that's retiring at 80. I mean, in general, the you know, what a lot of people were trying to do is retire at 65. Well, given that generally speaking, not entirely, because some death stuff is getting bad, going the wrong way. But I mean, in today's world, compared to 50 years ago, in today's world at 65, you've probably got a life expectancy of another 25 years. You know, you're good odds you make it into your 80s or 90s. And so you got to have enough. It's very hard to know what's the right number to have saved up, because you don't know what the inflation is going to be. You don't know how much they're going to rob. I mean, I saw my dad retire, in his 60s and had a fair amount of money. By the time he passed, it really wasn't very much money anymore, because the cost of everything gone up. So, and I think everybody's faced with that problem. It's got people working longer. And that's part of what's one of the evils of fiat is that, nobody can really retire with any sort of sense of security because you just don't know how quickly they're going to take your money away from you or the purchasing power of your money away from you. And you don't want to be 85 years old and eating cat food because you can't afford steak.
I
It's
mean, that's unfortunately the situation that we're living in, right? I mean, it's
right.
hurting people on both ends, right? It's hurting the people that are retiring and, they're having to go back in the workforce, and it's also hurting the younger generation that's trying to get in and,
Absolutely. I mean, I look at my kids are all in the 20s, millennials, and they're all doing fine, making decent salaries, but it's kind of like, gee, Dad, how am I ever going to afford a house? They've never been less affordable. They're very, it's very, there's very much a housing bubble, just like there's a bubble in all assets because of all this money floating around. And of course, now the interest rates are being jacked up. And that's the other thing I want to point out. This interest rates being jacked up really is the pin that I think is going to pop this bubble. I mean, it's taken a while, but we saw what it did to Silicon Valley Bank. And there are a lot more Silicon Valley banks out there, in my opinion. We just haven't found them yet. So that's coming to a broader swath of companies. I noticed I put up in my Twitter feed recently, I saw bankruptcies. Rate of bankruptcies has gone up substantially since these interest rates started going up. The other interest rate chart I think is really fascinating. You can Google it and just put in, US federal government interest expense, by year. And if you look at it, 2 or 3 years ago, we were in the $200 or $300 million a year. Or $1 billion, I'm sorry, a year range. And now we're kind of at 800, 850, going to a trillion. And of course, by raising interest rates to fight inflation, the US federal government is running much larger deficits to pay that interest. And so in my opinion, there's a natural limit to how far Powell can go here, before everything blows up, including the deficit. And the other thing that's going on that I find interesting is that there just aren't many people buying our bonds anymore. Chinese are reducing their balances, Japanese are reducing their balances. A lot of people are, people aren't willing. They're looking at the US and they're saying, hey, this kind of looks like a third world country. You guys are, printing a lot of money. You're spending a lot. You're spending a lot more than you should. You're running a huge deficit. You're not willing to control your entitlements. And as a result, we know that you're going to monetize this debt. Therefore, we know that the dollar isn't going to have as much purchasing power. In fact, I think that's the next big move out there right now. Dollar's in the 103 range right now. I think the dollar is going much, much lower. I really do. In fact, even Yellen said that, we could use a lower dollar. And people have talked about, hey, the US losing some of its reserve currency status wouldn't be a bad thing. And I think that's right. I mean, I think we have to do that. But in turn, what that brings here is more inflation. And my view is this next decade is going to look very much like the 70s, where probably the biggest economic risk to the average person is inflation. Whatever you have in savings, if you're not investing it in a way that will increase its value to match inflation, you're being robbed. You're losing value, savings value over time.
Yeah, and I mean that makes a ton of sense. And obviously, that there's the hard asset aspect of things, and it seems like inflation is just going to be running rampant. And we've had Yellen said that there's room for multiple global reserve currencies. I mean, they just kind of hinted. I mean, at first it was inflation was transitory, and now it seems like they're essentially priming all of us to be
Well,
ready.
that's correct. And I mean, I don't know if you've also seen, I mean, it's subtle, but in several places it's come out and said, well, maybe 2% is not the right target anymore. Maybe we can live with 3 or 4%. And I think the reason they're doing that is to condition everybody because, they're gonna at some point here. I mean, look, the Fed has three mandates, right? I mean, we know the first two have stated, full employment and stable or low inflation, which they've somehow interpreted as 2% a year. I mean, my view is low inflation is zero, but whatever. They've come to the conclusion thinking we can tolerate and we should want 2% a year. And that's Keynes and animal spirits. That's a whole different line of thought. But the third mandate that's not written down, but we know they have, is what I call financial stability. And in other words, if a bubble bursts, if things are really hectic and the economy has taken it in the chin, You know, they're going to drop interest rates, flood the system with money, open up the discount window, et cetera, in order to prevent large things from failing. And they did this in the bubble coming out of 2000, when the dot-com bubble burst. They dropped rates, you know, substantially to try and get things going again. And what that did was it created a bubble in housing. And of course, then that one burst and they dropped them again. And what they've now created, in my opinion, is the everything bubble. You know, they dropped them so low and held them so low for so long. And then, you know, followed that up with the COVID event and all the money they printed there that, you know, we can't really turn back now. I mean, we're kind of in a debt death spiral. And absent a major restructuring, I don't know how we get out of it. I think it's going to sadly continue to get worse, and inflation is going to continue to rage until such time as that becomes, you know, the major issue. And maybe we'll do a financial reset or, you know, a deval of the dollar, something akin to what Roosevelt did in the 30s when he devalued the dollar. I mean, this is what we're going through right now is a sovereign debt crisis, and it's very much a parallel to the sovereign debt crises of the early 19th century. I mean, those all occurred as a result of World War I. You know, but we had a bunch of them in all the various countries in Europe. And, you know, we're having one here right now, in my opinion. It's early days, but it started in 08. You know, they got it all back under control. It seemed calm for a while, but it seems to be accelerating again here.
Yeah, and it definitely seems to be accelerating at the very least, right? I mean, yeah. It's like we're at a house of cards right now, right? Like, what is it going to take for this house of cards, I guess, to pummel, do you think? Is it going to be like just the Powell essentially just continuing to raise interest rates? Do you think that's the right move? Or, like, I mean, I don't know.
I wouldn't want his job no matter what, because he's damned if he does and he's damned if he don't. Exactly. He doesn't. I mean, I don't know what he'll do. They generally get it wrong, so he'll probably keep raising rates until something breaks. I think the something breaking is the banks. They've already started to break. More of them will break. I think two related things that will break are the stock market. I think, you know, the stock market right now is on hopium, thinking that that he's going to pivot soon and more money is coming, free money is coming their way. And so it's being held together. I think, you know, the fundamentals of the economy are going to get to the stock market and that's going to break. And then probably the biggest one, the big enchilada, in my opinion, to break is the bond market. The bond market still is somewhat believing that we can go back to 2 or 3% inflation. And in my opinion, we can't. And the bond market is, you know, the interest rate is the price of money and it's sent by the supply and demand. And the supply is, you know, the amount the government wants to issue, and the demand are what investors are willing to buy. And, you know, the supply right now, I mean, we've got $32 trillion of debt, like $8 trillion of it rolls over in the next 12 to 18 months, and we're running a $2 trillion deficit. So, you know, they've suddenly, you know, because we've financed so much of it short term, because there wasn't a lot of demand on the long end of the curve, you know, we've got a lot of money that's very subject to these interest rates. I mean, if Powell keeps going and he takes the Fed funds rate up to, you know, 6, 6.25, 6.5, everything's going to break, in my opinion, including the bond market. And because there just aren't enough buyers. And so, you know, at that point in time, I mean, right now the government's selling bonds through QT, you know, quantitative tightening. The demand just will not be there, and they will have to go to yield curve control, in my opinion, which is a resumption of QE, which is a resumption of printing money. And so I think we have those things in our future. It sure is interesting to watch Powell trying to bluff and pretend that they're not there, you know, and that's, to my way of seeing it, that's what he's doing, excuse me, but he's got a very hard hand to play, because the math is relentlessly against him.
Yeah, it definitely seems like everything's stacked against him, but I agree with you. I would not want his job. I mean, I don't know if there's any money in the world that could make me want his position right now.
It's karma that he's there, because he's got such a big ego that he wanted to get reappointed. Anyone with half a brain could look at what was going on when his appointment came up a year or so ago and say, holy shit, this guy's got half a brain. He'll get the fuck out of there and declare victory, right? But he didn't. You know, he's like, oh, I don't want to be the first guy to not get reappointed. So he campaigned to get reappointed. He got reappointed. Well, okay, now what? I mean, he's gonna, no matter what happens here, and it's hard to tell exactly what the roadmap is because it depends on what they do. I don't see how he gets out of this without having a terrible reputation for being responsible for, things really being in a bad position.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, it seems like you think we're in the camp for more a more pain ahead, right? So, I mean, do you think, I'll ask you, like, if you go on like the financial Twitter side of things, there's really two camps, right? There's one that looks at the rearward data and says we're not in a recession yet because unemployment's not very high. The CPI print came at 4% last month. Those kind of metrics, they're looking at all that kind of stuff. And then there's the other side of the camp, which looks at everything under the hood. We got credit card debt at an all-time high. We got personal savings at an all-time low. We got, basically all these bubbles, student loan repayments not even going yet. So many things and so many cracks underneath the hood.
Yeah, there are a lot of cross currents, and it does make it tricky. I mean, I look at the TSA data and people are still traveling. I look at the open table data and people are still going to restaurants and but you're starting to see at the edges the fraying. I mean, you're seeing more delinquencies in the cars and more delinquencies on the mortgages. You're starting to see some of the employment stuff going the wrong direction slowly. You're seeing some companies are getting hurt, in terms of results. I mean, Micron semiconductor manufacturer just reported dreadful results. I mean, just huge losses. I mean, it's a big, robust economy, and we printed a lot of money. I mean, I've heard as many as 20% of the economy is being paid by the government in some form. So if you're getting a government check, you're not really at risk of, losing your income stream. We don't have a highly levered housing market the way we did in the 80s. The bubble's kind of subtle, but it's there. And I think it's going to come about when I think the biggest thing that's prevented Bitcoin and gold from going to the moon is that the stock market has really felt like a one-way bet for most people. And that's in large part because we had enormous deflation from 1980 to present. And in a deflationary environment where interest rates are getting lower and lower and lower, the value of stocks gets higher and higher and higher. And you're seeing this echo bubble. I mean, 2021 or two was the worst market in a long time for both stocks and bonds. And yet, they came roaring back. And so I think 2021 was an enormous bubble top. We went down roughly 20% in the stock market. Now we're back another 11 or so. So stock market off the peak is only down 9%. So this bubble hasn't really burst, but it reminds me, Brandon, very much of what happened in the 08, 07, 08 area, which is to say, it takes a little bit of time for things to flow through. I mean, if you watch The Big Short, I mean, Burry was hurting in 2006 and even in 2007. And, then in 07, in the summer of 07, the Bear Stearns CDS funds, real estate funds, blew up. And everyone was like, oh, that's interesting. What's that mean? And we all knew, I was an investor back then, we all knew that there was an enormous housing bubble based on unrealistically low interest rates. I mean, there were people were standing in line to buy houses. It was the same old crazy, crazy stuff. So we could see it. But if you could see it as early as 06, 07, and guess what? It didn't become a real issue until September, October, November of 08. So, the time between when the first, cracks obviously appear and you hit the bottom, it could be a while. But if you look at, I mean, my view is, we're starting to see cracks now. Silicon Valley Bank broke, and that was a big one. And so I would expect that in the next 6 months there's gonna be a lot more negative news on the things we talked about, employment, inflation, the economy, etc. I think it's all going to go in the wrong direction. And at some point, panic sets in, and then it can go too far in the wrong direction. But that also, can be a real fuelant for somebody who's got a good business and knows how to take advantage of it. So.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like there's been like a lot of I guess unrealistic businesses that have been, you know, in this zero interest rate environment, right? I mean, they've been essentially not making a profit for, you know, years at a time, maybe even a decade, and they just keep getting funded because money was cheap, essentially. So, I mean, it seems like it helped like fuel a lot of the tech growth and other things like that. But, you know, Powell tried, it maybe saw the writing on the wall in 2019, but, you know, quickly, you know, as you said, like maybe it was his ego or what, he wanted to be reappointed. He quickly reversed course, but now it seems like he's kind of scrambling to, I guess, make up for lost time in a sense. But, you know, it seems like it's almost obvious that the money printing is going to come down the line. But, you know, I'm curious how you think like Bitcoin's going to react, because, you know, you alluded to, you know, potentially Bitcoin shooting up, but this is the first time we're going to have a halving where, you know, where the economy.
Yeah. No, I know you get, which has led some people, and also the supply of available coins. I mean, there's been some great work by, I can't remember the guy's name, but he was on a podcast recently. He remains anonymous. He was a Carrot, maybe something or other.
Rational Root. Yeah.
Rational Root. Yeah. He identifies as a carrot, right? Yep. He was on Peter McCormick's podcast. They had a carrot in front of his face. But, and as he points out that, you know, there's a lot less Bitcoin actually on exchanges available to be traded. So, you know, you get less available for trade. You get a halving cycle taking place. And then you add on top of that, you know, a flip in the Federal Reserve policies that leads to, you know, massive additional money printing. And, you know, his view is, hey, the last cycle was kind of truncated, maybe because of the Chinese miners going offline. There are a lot of reasons and theories for that. But, you know, he thinks that there's a chance this next cycle takes us to 500,000 a coin. Look, none of us know, and we can't predict that. I'm not counting on that. You know, I'll be pretty satisfied when we break the old time high of 68 or 9. And when we kind of break through 100, I think, you know, then that'll be just another touch point for everybody who's watching it and skeptical to go, oops, yep, it did it again. You know, another higher high, you know, and so, you know, you're right though. It's an interesting set of circumstances that lead us to that point. Having said that, do recall that, you know, the response to COVID in 2020 was part of what led to that next launch from 10,000 to 50,000. You know, so we've had some Bitcoin price growth in a massive printing operation. I mean, that whole COVID response where they sent checks out to everybody and PPP to all those companies, and, you know, they grew the money supply 42% in 2 years. I mean, good God, that's never happened before. I mean, that's why I say it's a really interesting and exciting time here, because, you know, we're definitely outside of the boundaries of what's normal. You know, and right now it might not feel that great because, you know, I don't know, at least for gold guys, it doesn't feel that great because gold can't seem to get through 2000. But, you know, I mean, even this year, I mean, even in spite of the fact that Powell is pretending to be Paul Volcker, which he's not, you know, Bitcoin's up almost 100% from the bottom. I mean, it bottomed at 15,000, what, you know, fall of last year. I don't know the exact day or month, but, and now it's at 30. So, I mean, that's less than half a year. So, you know, Bitcoin will smell it, gold will smell it, and we will be rewarded as the central banks do what they inevitably have to do. And that's the important thing, I think, for people to understand, that they absolutely have to do this. I mean, look, some people say, well, okay, what can make your thesis wrong? You know, try and be objective about this, play devil's advocate. And I'll tell you, you know, and people laugh when I tell them this because it's not likely, but I say, yeah, okay, well, here's what could screw us up, okay? Let's say the government gets really responsible. Let's say, right, you're laughing, right? Let's say they, you know, means test Social Security and cut Social Security benefits by 30% and decide to stop funding Ukraine and pull out of all these countries that we've got military troops in and cut the defense budget in half and put spending caps on other areas of the budget and suddenly, you know, and raise taxes. And suddenly the budget starts to look like it's balanced. Well, in that particular case, I mean, I think Bitcoin would still do okay because of the adoption curve and all the other use cases. But, you know, gold particularly, I think, you know, wouldn't do as well because people would say, well, you know, I mean, inflation is driven by deficit spending, which then leads to monetizing that deficit spending through money printing. I mean, that's the obvious and direct connection. You know, money printing leads to expansion of the money supply, which then leads to more money chasing the same amount of goods, which leads to higher goods prices, which is the definition of inflation, goods and services prices. So So if for some way, if in some way the governments were start would really start to get responsible, you know, this wouldn't work as well. It would take longer. It wouldn't be as good a thesis as it is. But I just look at the U.S. as an example. You know, you're in Canada. You know, we just bumped our debt limit up to really unlimited for a couple of years. And they were bragging about how responsible they were because they put a flat cap on 7% of the total spending, like 93% of the budget they didn't even touch. They said, oh, but we're cutting back. This 7% can't grow for the next 2 years. Well, whoop-de-doo. I mean, that's, right? I mean, that's nothing. That's a rounding error. Meanwhile, CPI is going to adjust Social Security up another 5 or 6% this year. It went up almost 9% last year. Meanwhile, the interest expense is running $850 billion a year. As they continue to roll these bonds over at these high interest rates, it's going to go to a trillion two. Last year, the deficit, last fiscal year in the United States, calendar year ended September 2022, the deficit was $1.3 trillion. This year, it's going to be at least $2.2 trillion, maybe $2.3 or $2.4. So, the U.S. is looking like a third world country, fiscally and financially, which leads to money printing, which leads to the thesis that we are playing, which is that, fiat always gets debased. It's just math. I mean, that's Greg's line, being true now more than ever. And so you've got to hold scarce assets,
Quick commercial break to bring you some of the dopest Bitcoin merch in the game. That's Hodlers Official. That's HODLERS official.com. You can go and get yourself a black jersey like I got on right here, or a white one where you can get the Genesis pack with the 09 on the block, repping Satoshi, repping the number one guy in Bitcoin. And you can get yourself the best merch by going to hodlersofficial.com and using promo code GREENCANDLE for 10% off your entire order. That's two handfuls of percentages, ladies and gentlemen. 10% off. You can use the rest of that to purchase more Bitcoin or do whatever you want with it, but I'm saving you some Skrilla Manila. So go ahead and get yourself one. I prefer the black, but if you like the white, I don't mind that either. All right, now back to the show. No, exactly. But, you brought up like Bitcoin doing a little bit better in a certain scenario than gold. And I kind of want to dive into that a little bit with the COVID scenario, right? Because we had the massive amounts of money printing, right? The 42% printing in 2 years. Bitcoin seemed to perform really well, right? It shot up to the all-time high. And then obviously, now it's kind of floating around, like 30K-ish right now. But the narrative kind of going around that time was like, gold was supposed to be the inflation hedge, and it didn't do really well in, that time.
Well, it's yes and no. I mean, it in gold terms, it did pretty well. And a couple of things to remember, because I was riding both of those at the time. There was a time gold actually smelled it first. So gold let's go back to pre all that stuff. Let's go back to 2017. Okay. Gold was kind of stuck at 1365, and I don't know, Bitcoin. Well, 2017, 2018, 2019, Bitcoin was some in the $3,000 to $5,000 range. You know what I mean? Maybe a little higher, maybe 8,000 a few times. Gold moved first. Bitcoin kind of stayed in that 5 to 10 range through most, I don't have the charts right in front of me, but through a lot of 17, 18. And gold broke through 1365, and started going higher and eventually squirted up to as high as 2020. And so that's a, 30, 40% move in gold. In gold, I know by Bitcoin standards, that's shitty, right? I mean, it's the 40% in a few years, that's shitty. But by gold standards, that's pretty dramatic. I mean, gold typically, it goes up, a good year for gold is up 10 or 11%, and a bad year is down a little bit. So, but what then happened is, of course, Bitcoin was slow. And I remember it very clearly because I had friends who were in both. And the Bitcoiners were like, Jesus Christ, your shit's moving and mine's not. And I was like, yeah, I know, I don't get it. But then once Bitcoin started to move, it blew past gold, right? I mean, and so, gold went up 30, 40%. Bitcoin did a five bagger, right? So yeah, Bitcoin, this is why Bitcoin is the sharper spear, and it's the much better investment because it's got two things going on, the money printing and the adoption curve, whereas gold just has the money printing, right? And so, but they tend to move in parallel. And honestly, Bitcoiners should be rooting for gold to get, even if Bitcoin stays at 30, Bitcoiners should be rooting for gold to get through 2050, which is the all-time high that it's seen in the last few years. Because if and when it does, it'll be a breakout. Everyone will know that. And it'll imply, in my view, it'll imply that Bitcoin's going to follow it, probably much more dramatically. but gold is more widely distributed. And I think it's the one thing it's pretty good at, and I've noticed how it trades over the years, is it kind of smells what's coming before it actually happens. You know, it actually started moving before Powell did his pivot and before the repo blowout and before COVID stuff. Gold was moving throughout all of that. It kind of knew, you know, for whatever reason, there's money printing coming. We're on the move. And then when it came, Bitcoin went berserk. And I think that's, I'm looking for that same pattern on this next cycle. So I've got my eye glued on the gold price. And everyone says, well, gold, it's really sucked. Well, it has. For 3 years, it's gone nowhere. It's kind of bounced between 2050 and 1700. But, you know, right now it's at 19 and change, 1920 maybe. That's down 6% off the all-time high. We've had one of the most aggressive interest rate hiking cycles ever, and gold's down 6%. I mean, in the past, when you had very aggressive rate hiking cycles, gold would go down 20-30% easily or more. So to me, gold is aware of and smelling the fact that this rate hiking cycle cannot last, and it will not last, and that they will pivot. So you know, watch the price of gold, and it'll, in my opinion, it'll be an early warning indicator that the price of Bitcoin is about to take off too. And then put your money in Bitcoin, because it's going to go much farther, much faster.
Yeah. Yeah, that's for sure. It always seems to be that way. But it's interesting that you lined that out that way, that, you know, you're kind of like looking at the gold to be almost like the first mover,
it's historically, that's what's happened. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, it makes sense. I mean, because, you know, the gold investors kind of have that hard money, you know, knowledge.
Well, there are more of them. And it's the whole world. And that's the thing. I mean, remember, the world's not just the US and Canada. I mean, we're small. You know, I mean, one of the things that's interesting, it's in the incrementum report. It's a very good chart that shows it. Last year, central banks throughout the world bought a record amount of gold. You know, and frankly, a lot of these countries, they're like the old gold bugs. They don't really get it. I don't think India gets Bitcoin. I don't think most of China gets Bitcoin. You know, Russia, I think, gets it a little bit more. I don't think the Arab states get Bitcoin. And I don't think Brazil gets it quite the way we get it. And so when those countries are saying, hey, the U.S. is out of control, they're seizing our assets, so they're going to do monetary debasement, their first thought is, okay, we got to buy more gold. You know, gold will protect us from that. You know, I mean, eventually the first thought will be, we got to buy more Bitcoin, but they're not there yet. You know, they're not down that curve. I mean, this is an area where the U.S. leads, because we've got more savvy Bitcoiners in the U.S. probably, you know, than any other country in the world, right? So, I mean, I should say the U.S. and Canada, really what I call North America.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that statement, I would say. But yeah. You've been very generous with your time. But before I let you go, I got to ask one more question.
Sure. So
what do you think it's going to take to get to hyper Bitcoinization?
Oh, yeah. Well, historically, it's always just been a loss of confidence, right? I mean, people need to realize that their money is losing value so rapidly that they absolutely positively have to protect themselves. I mean, everyone has within them a self-preservation mechanism, so that when you're out in out in the jungle and a lion comes running at you, you know, you run like hell, or you try and hide so you don't get eaten alive. And, you know, if you look at Weimar, if you look at Venezuela, you look at anywhere where the money is being destroyed. I mean, you look at Turkey today or Argentina today, you know, when it's a process, right? You start off with low inflation, then you get to medium inflation, then you get to high inflation. Then you get to really high inflation, and you know, you watch the financial of the country you're dealing with. And you know, right now we're in one of those deflationary periods, because look, the high inflation we had and what happened to the price of gold and Bitcoin, that scared the shit out of the authorities. And that's why Powell's trying to be a tough guy. You know, he knows that there's a risk of hyperinflation here. He knows it. And that's why he's doing what he's doing for as long as he can do it. But at some point in time, there's going to be a bigger risk, which is societal collapse. And he's going to say to himself, oh, shit, you know, I can push this hard, but I can't have societal collapse. Well, guess what? New inflation target's 4. We're going to have to live with 4 for a little while we, you know, print some money and so on and so forth. And of course, that'll be the next leg up in this shit. And so eventually, you know, what used to be 2% inflation, you know, I mean, you get these ratchets. I mean, Tavi Costa on Twitter has a great chart which shows kind of the three waves of inflation in the 70s. And there were a couple of times they knew inflation was a problem in the 70s. They tried to solve it. They tried to tighten, and inflation went back in, and they did. And inflation came down a little bit. But then they had economic troubles. So they loosened up again. Boom, inflation went back. And each time it was a higher low and a higher high. And of course, they solved it all because Volcker at the end of the decade went crazy, took interest rates to 20% and said, I'm going to solve this once and for all. And there wasn't, you know, and they could do that because the debt level was low enough. And they did. And they got, you know, they literally got inflation under control and put it back in the can. But they can't do that today because debt's now 130% of GDP, not 30. And so, you know, what will happen is the inflation will just keep getting worse each year. And eventually maybe somebody will be elected who's a socialist. Maybe we'll get an MMT person in there. People will be really hurting. We'll go to, you know, CBDC and universal basic income. And, you know, the government will continue to think it can get away with printing money. And once it becomes clear that that's the case, anyone who has money will say, I need to be outside of the dollar. I need to be outside of this currency. And that's what Austrians call a crack-up boom, which is, you get paid something in dollars, you immediately exchange it because you know it's going to lose value. And eventually when nobody wants to hold the dollar, well, then it's worthless. There's no point in holding it because you know it's worthless. And so, you know, it's Hemingway's, you know, gradually then all at once. And, you know, it's like Balaji had a great podcast with Marty Bent. It was long, but he talked about how Russia fell. And, you know, and the parallels are good, by the way. I mean, you know, Russia was lying like crazy. All the statistics were fake, et cetera, et cetera. But just eventually one day it just kind of imploded. And I think that's what will happen here. I mean, when confidence is fully lost in the government and the Federal Reserve System, you know, everyone will say, you know, what do you mean you don't own gold and Bitcoin? What are you, nuts? You know, you like being robbed, you know, and inflation will be just raging. And eventually the currency will become worthless. Now, having said that, there's a possible stopping point before we get to that stage, which is kind of a little bit of what Roosevelt did on the opposite spectrum when we were in raging deflation. And that is what I call a government reset. I mean, if somebody were really smart at the Federal Reserve and within the government, they would say, oh, this inflation's out of control. We need to have a reset, you know, and they'd try and wipe out the debt and, you know, have a new dollar replacing five old dollars. And, you know, in effect, the new dollar would be based on something sound like oil or Bitcoin or gold or whatever, something you couldn't print. And, you know, we'd reset it and try and get inflation. They might try that. You know, they might try a CBDC. I mean, you know, they're going to try anything they can to maintain their privilege because they're a bunch of crooks. But, and we know that. But, you know, meanwhile, you know, they can't print Bitcoin. They can't print gold. And, you know, I'm willing to bet that whenever their currency fails, these are the two best alternative currencies. So I think others should make that bet, even if not with all of their, you know, net worth or even a huge part of your net worth, with a piece of your net worth. Because, you know, I mean, if we have hyper Bitcoinization, Bitcoin's going up 100x or more, you know, gold's going up 10 or 15x or more, you know. And so even if all you had was 10% of your portfolio in these two assets, you would effectively protect all the other part of your portfolio that became worthless because the currency it was in is worthless. You know, so you don't need to be 100% in this shit. But I talk every day to people who don't own any of this stuff. And I'm like, what are you, out of your mind? You know, I mean, they got 60, 40 stocks and bonds and real estate, and because that's what's always worked, you know. And look, they're right. I mean, for 40 years in a deflationary world, it was a good place to be. But we're not, the rules are changing, and we're not in a deflationary world, not for the next 10 years. We're in a massively inflationary world because of the way the central banks have mismanaged all of this. And that's just, to my way of seeing it, that's just a fact. So, you know, the difficulty is you got all these zigzags. There's a great chart on Twitter done by Dan Oliver at Mermican, which shows gold priced in Marx and the Weimar Republic. And it's got all these huge zigzaggy lines. I don't know, you can maybe put it in your show notes, but you know, it's going to be volatile, and that's hard. But you got to know what you own, know why you own it, recognize that, you know, 2, 5, 10 years from now, I think you'd be very glad you own sound money assets, because I don't think there's anything that indicates to me that the governments are going to get more responsible and make, you know, the dollar a better store of value than it has been. You know, I don't see that happening. So,
yeah. And I agree with you. I don't really see it
happening. Right. I mean, now if that starts happening, we got to rethink this a little bit, and maybe your weighting in this stuff isn't as high, right?
Yeah.
But, exactly. But I haven't seen it. I mean, you know, capping 7% of the expenditures of the U.S. federal government for a couple of years—that's not—that's a Band-Aid on a gaping wound. You know, that doesn't solve it.
Yeah. Exactly. But you've been very generous with your time.
Oh, it was good to be with you. I enjoyed it. Nice meeting you.
Yeah. Thanks so much for tuning in to this great episode. If you enjoyed this one and you want some more content, click on the link right here and check out my latest interview with Tom Luongo. We get into it all. If you've known Tom, he's a wild one, so stay tuned. And if you found some value in this podcast, please smash that like button, hit that subscribe button so you get notified of the next videos. All right, I'll catch you at the next one.